The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show. This is, if you're listening live, August 1st, 2015. This is a live recorded show, so no phone calls today. We'll be answering some questions that we received, either be via phone call or email a little bit later, but no new phone calls today. My name is Chris Stein, a certified financial planner and a finance instructor at Colorado State University, and I'm, as usual, here with Jim Salnier, also a certified financial planner. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, Jim.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, Chris.
And good day, Pete.
Good
Peter.
Day.
Peter Scott is here
you gotta use your
with
Australian
us as well.
Accent. I keep telling you that.
I do.
Good day.
Why does it have to be cartoon Australia, though?
Good day.
That's a good Australian accent.
No, it's not. They don't have that.
They don't go like this. They don't talk like this.
But mm-hmm. when they say good day, they do.
But they don't, like, increase,
the octave?
Yeah.
You guys talk, I'll help out.
My Australian accent
does. Ooh, goodness gracious. Ooh, I'm Australian.
No, I don't think so. That's not it.
Whatever.
Can you say it just regular pitch?
Good day.
Now that's kind of like Australian Walter Cronkite or something. I don't know. Let's just not try to do
an Australian accent.
Any accents on here? I don't. You can do your Boston accent because that just comes naturally. But
okay.
So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. We're here to talk about retirement and IRA
IRAs.
Topics.
Yeah.
Little
and Social Security
today.
We have two mixed Social Security
in a little
questions.
Bit. Yeah.
Yes.
We have just spent several shows talking about trusts as beneficiary of an IRA. We talked about trust
assets.
More kind of
and
in general
assets,
with other
yeah.
assets, but kind of really explored a little more in depth the trust as beneficiary of an IRA as a form of protection and control over those assets. If you're interested in that, just take a look at some of our, well, don't look, listen, how about, to some of our past shows, either on iTunes, you'll find them, under the Retirement and IRA Show, or you can go to the retirementandiraShow.com, and they'll be posted up there. And I think we're pretty current on the website and on iTunes. Sometimes there's
a
week or two lag.
Technical difficulties uh-huh. with iTunes. Uh-huh. The Code Geeks, which is not derogatory, it's their actual name, have straightened it out. But there were problems for those on iTunes if you're wondering why things weren't updating. Apparently it was a programming error on someone's behalf, not ours, because I don't know what the heck we're doing there. But they fixed it. So yeah. there was, because we had someone point out to us they couldn't see shows after March. Then I looked on my podcast. I couldn't see shows after May, and we got a hold of Code Geeks. They fixed it, and everything is showing. So
very nice.
On iTunes, we probably lost a lot of listeners. We apologize for the trouble we had. It looked on Julia's end as if it was updating, but in reality, it wasn't.
Bizarre.
Very.
Technology is such a wonderful and horrible thing all at the same time.
Especially Apple stuff. As someone who has an iPhone and an iPad, I will say they don't work as
smoothly.
Effortless and smoothly as Apple has a reputation of. Just want to put that out there.
In case Shocking. Apple's listening.
Because it's certainly not user error.
No, of course
Absolutely
not.
Absolutely not.
Flawless
Never.
User.
Hmm. Say what?
Flawless user.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well informed.
Yeah. Well, the computer is supposed to be smart enough to overcome the deficiencies of the user.
Were that user to have deficiencies, which in this case
hypothetical
said user does not.
Yes.
And the user is also very modest, I might add.
And humble.
Yes,
of course. Attractive.
Well, that's not
And currently available if anyone is listening with the sound of this voice. Hey, I'm trying, okay?
A little hard maybe today. So what are we going to talk about today, James? Or Peter?
We have two email questions. We had a dearth of email questions, and then all of a sudden we got two, both on Social Security. Mm. So we will address those two email questions. One I've already replied to, and one you were supposed to but haven't yet.
Because I hadn't received the question.
Because
it's
someone
stuck
forgot
in
to,
your
right,
email.
Pete forgot to remind me to tell you about the
is
question.
Is that the flawless user we're talking
no,
about?
No, Pete forgot to remind me to tell you
oh,
to answer
okay,
the email.
Okay, got it.
So perfect. Don't let that happen again, Pete.
I promise I won't. Just as soon as I know there's an email, I'll let you know.
Well, I'll let you know next time I get an email so
then
you
I can
remind me to tell
it.
Chris.
Okay.
All right.
I think we have
that
a
sounds like the most efficient way to run the office possible.
So I do apologize. One of the emails was sent to by time this show plays, because it's only Monday today. So, I mean, Wednesday. No, it's Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So by time this
and,
show
plays. He's Peter, and I'm Chris.
By time this show plays on Saturday, mm-hmm. this person's email will have been answered personally by you.
That's great.
It just took a week to get to them.
Okay.
But we did get two email questions last week, so both mm-hmm. on Social Security, so we can answer
so
those.
Do that, yeah, and?
And then Wade Fow.
Fow.
Fow. Damn, mm-hmm. I knew I was going to mess that up. Wade Fow, mm-hmm. who is a finance instructor, a professor at the American College in Pennsylvania on mm-hmm. financial planning. Mm-hmm. He's a retirement specialist. Mm-hmm. He wrote an article recently on the pitfalls of retirement planning, and he has a good six or seven issues that can go wrong and derail a person's retirement income plan. And he outlines those, and we're going to opine on Professor Fow. Mm.
Let's remember as we do that, we've actually done this kind of warning list of things in the past, and remember some of the feedback we got is people want solutions.
Oh.
So as we read these, why don't we be thinking of when we throw out, okay, here's a problem, here's maybe a way to mitigate that issue.
Perhaps we should have discussed this prior to recording the show so we would have our solutions handy?
They should be things you can just come up with. You are a professional.
Spur of the moment, you want me to do this.
Well, we all will contribute.
In my typical pithy self?
Well, you can keep the pith to a minimum.
Pete, what do you think? Can we handle it on the fly, come up with solutions?
Oh, well, it doesn't have to be specifics, just kind of in general, things that yeah. could help avoid or minimize it, right?
I have Pete. Every
yeah,
confidence.
But you kind of put him on the spot.
You just put me on the spot.
I'm just reminding you.
I was going to read Wade's article. Now you're telling me you're to just, come up with solutions.
No, this is a solution show. This isn't a let's just throw out a bunch of problems.
No, that is true.
People know
show,
there are
right.
problems.
We did do a show on that. We did get feedback. Great article, a great show on an article. Now tell us how to avoid it.
Right.
And that's, so, and that's fair.
All right.
And
well,
I have every confidence in the two of you to answer this completely.
Great.
Wait, no, this is a three-part show here.
Oh, I thought I was just watching.
No. We there could be something tied to estate planning in here. Let me look.
I bet there is. Or just
oh, yeah, right here,
someone
yep.
with life experience.
There's one that I can easily tie into estate planning.
Excellent. Do you want to start with that one?
We'll probably start with we'll start with number seven.
I don't think we have to go in the order that he
Wade
said.
Does it?
No.
But Professor Fow is,
Fow. So we're going to refer to him throughout the rest of this show as Wade.
Wade. For those who don't know, he spells his last name P-F-A-U.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't. His family has chosen to spell his name that way, yes.
And he continues the tradition.
And he's continued the tradition.
Fow is what you're saying.
I believe that is the correct pronunciation, Fow. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And he's definitely not of Asian descent. He looks white in his picture.
What does
picture.
That matter?
Well, because we thought it could be an Asian name.
I don't think
I don't
it
think
was
it's
we.
Pronounced. I don't think it's spelled how that would be, so I don't know.
Well, I thought it was Fow.
I don't think you're going to change the pronunciation either way. I think it's Fow, no matter Fow. Where in the world his family is from.
Well, you thought Norway.
Because I think I've seen that name before in a Scandinavian
dialect
context.
Okay. Mm-hmm. He kind of looks Norwegian.
like take Nokia, for example. That sounds kind of, like it should be from Asia and somewhere. It's not. It's Finnish.
Well, I knew Nokia's Finnish, but it doesn't sound Asian to me.
Okay. A lot of people it does.
Ends in a vowel, so it could be Italian, too.
Well, that'd be Nokia. right?
Hey, no? Are you talking to me?
Yeah, right.
All right. Okay, so that's what we're doing today. We're going to talk about Wade's pitfalls of retirement planning in the seven. We'll begin with number seven because Pete can tie it into estate planning. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go through Professor Foe's seven things.
His name is Wade.
Wade. Okay, we're going to go through Wade's seven items. But we're going to get to first email questions on Social Security. Okay.
Oh, we are?
Yes.
Oh.
Do we have enough time?
Yes, we have 15 and a half minutes.
Oh, God, okay. All right, where's the first one?
That's just in the first segment, and then we have three more.
It's all right. People expect this.
So we have about
90
total minutes to do this.
Where the heck's the email?
I just had it.
I know I just had them. Well, yeah, say something, Pete.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it may take the full 90 minutes to locate
to just find the email.
No, I just read you the damn emails.
Now
I can't find them.
We're going to tap
here we go. Okay.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
I got the first email.
Yes. Okay. This is the one you've already answered. Let's hope.
This is the one I've answered.
Let's hope that you answered it correctly.
But I will let you answer it on the radio.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to paraphrase the question because the question came in secondhand from an attorney for their client. Mm. So, in short, someone is married for 20 years.
Okay.
And then divorced.
Okay.
Many years later, when this person was age 62, mm-hmm. the divorced spouse died. The question is, this 62-year-old who was married for 20 years, whose ex-husband has now died, mm-hmm. wanted to collect a survivor benefit, allow their own benefit to continue growing, and use the survivor benefit for paying some of the college expenses of the two children who are in grad school. Mm-hmm. She went to Social Security to file for survivor benefit mm-hmm. and was told you earn too much. The earnings test will reduce and eliminate all of your survivor benefit. Mm-hmm. So the person reached out to me hoping that Social Security was wrong. Mm-hmm. And that survivor benefits were not reduced. And why don't you answer the question?
Well, first thing, to catch everybody up to speed here, you are owed or you are entitled to a survivor benefit on a divorced spouse's record as long as you were married at least 10 years. And...
Hello?
Had reached at least age 60 and not have been remarried yet. So it didn't say
age 60
in there,
for a survivor, right. Not for a spousal.
Right.
If your ex is still living,
right.
You have
but,
to be age 62.
But it's a survivor
62.
Benefit. But she may have voided her survivor benefit had she married prior to 60. We're just going to assume she didn't.
Otherwise,
Social Security would have said, no, you're not owed this because you've remarried.
No,
but
she is still
the
single.
The fact that they're pointing out
is
the
62.
Earnings test. So she's passed the threshold of 60, which would... provide her with a survivor benefit, assuming he had passed away before she was 60. But she's 62 now, so she's past the age 60. She didn't remarry before 60. So she's absolutely entitled to a survivor benefit based on her ex-spouse's, who's now deceased, record. However, the earnings test, which occurs prior to your full retirement age, or it's in place until you reach your full retirement age, will reduce your benefits, whether they be survivor benefits, spousal benefits, or your own benefit. And I think what they were hoping is that the earnings test only applied to her own earned benefit and did not apply to the survivor benefit. And that is not true, meaning Social Security was exactly right.
Right. And that's what I essentially said to this person, is that your client is subject to the earnings test. Yep. And if they're earning that much, no hope. But I did point out, I did point out that because we are talking here survivor benefit, that is a separate benefit from her own personal retirement benefit. And when she reaches age 66 in four more years, and her full retirement age might be 66 and 2 months based on her date of birth, but when she reaches 66 and 2 months, she could apply for her survivor benefit and allow her personal benefit to continue to grow to age 70. In other words, claiming it early isn't going to affect her own benefit. She could also claim now. There's no reason why she can't, except she's still working. If she were to stop working or lose her job, she could claim her survivor benefit and also allow, once she excuse me, she doesn't have to get to full retirement age to allow her own retirement benefit to grow because they're two separate pools.
Right.
And that's what's key here.
Which is different from spousal benefits.
Exactly. If the ex was still alive, and this is what makes it unique, Pete, if the guy was still alive, and let's say she wasn't working, and she went to apply for Social Security, they would deem her, I call it dooming, Social Security calls it deeming, they're going to say, hey, you're applying for benefits before your full retirement age. And spousal benefits are kind of integrated or intertwined with your retirement benefits. So we're going to deem you to be claiming your benefit, and it's not going to be able to grow anymore, even though she applies for a spousal benefit. But because the guy died, because the ex died, and in this case she was married for 20 years, she only had to be married for 10, because he's dead, that's not a spousal benefit now. It's a different S word. It's a survivor benefit. And a survivor benefit isn't all by itself. It's a benefit all by its lonesome. So she could have applied for that at age 62. It would have been reduced from what she would have got if she waited, but she could have claimed a survivor benefit at 62, and it would not have reduced her personal retirement benefit.
That she could then possibly switch to later on if it grew to a larger amount than the survivor benefit.
Absolutely.
She obviously wouldn't want to switch if it never got larger, but in many cases, that's what happened. If you have two spouses, which were exes at this point, that both worked and had a career and had substantial Social Security earnings, they may very well, that might be a very good technique.
You have much more flexibility if your ex dies than if they're still alive.
Which is very often the case that they wish for, but
there's no details about the relationship here. Yeah. But
one thing I wanted to raise, the kids are in graduate school, but had they had, or if they were a little younger, they would be entitled to a benefit also, would they not?
Yes. Now, that's something totally different. That would be part of the family benefit if they were in high school and under the age of 19, or if they were under the age of 16, then the wife would have got a benefit as a wife. It's the mother benefit, you know, the parental benefit. Excuse me. I couldn't figure that out.
Not the mother of all benefits.
No. but yes, if you are a surviving spouse of someone who died, and you are taking care of children under the age of 16 that are the deceased worker's children, you are entitled to a benefit. But that wasn't the case here. And also not the case here, the kids were in grad school and in their 20s. If they were in high school, the children could have applied for a benefit.
Right.
And that's also until their age 19, is that
as
correct?
As long as they're in high school.
But not college.
Not college. Huh. They have to be in high school, otherwise it stops at 18.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you have a dumb 19-year-old,
you get an extra year.
You
do get an extra year until they reach the age of 19 if they are still in high school.
I see.
But not if they've gone on to college.
Right.
So, but that wasn't, we didn't talk about that a lot here because that didn't apply. That didn't apply in this particular case.
Okay, and then we got another question on Saturday, which by time this show is, will have been answered. I'm just trying to find it here. Do you have enough time to get into it or
yes.
not?
We still have 7 minutes.
Oh, goodness. Okay, well.
We're going to use up all of our stuff here in the first
I'm
segment,
trying to
though.
Find it.
Yep.
Okay, there it is. Goodness. Okay. Jim. Your knowledge and expertise in retirement planning.
It didn't start like that. I can always tell his tell is crossing his hands this.
Oh, really? Then I'll uncross.
Uh-huh.
Because it clearly says here, your knowledge and expertise in retirement planning stands in stark contrast to the often juvenile and questionable advice provided by your cohorts.
Yeah.
Keep up the good work.
I'm sure it says that.
It says that. Mm-hmm. And then it goes on to read, should we mention that they signed it George as well? So be ready with our little George thing. My niece was married for 12 years in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Is she due Social Security benefits, and does this decrease her ex-spouse's benefits if she were to claim? Thanks, and love your show.
Well, it depends on if Texas secedes.
From the Union.
From the Union.
It has nothing to do with Texas.
She was born in Texas.
And married in Texas.
Yeah.
And his exes are in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Yes. All of his exes.
So, Jim, you're right. At this point, It doesn't matter what state it was in.
Correct.
This is a federal.
Now, you will be answering this particular person who we shall name George. You will answer this email. Mm-hmm. So how would you go about answering it?
Well, via email.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
We hear so, typing going.
Right. So the fact, once again, that she was married for at least 10 years.
In this case,
that's
12.
That's the key. Qualify her or entitle her to a spousal benefit or even survivor benefit if he ends up passing away on his work record. Now, she asked about the spousal benefit specifically that would become available at her age 62 at the earliest, but at a reduced amount, or later on at her full retirement age at its full amount. But yes, she would be entitled to such a benefit unless she remarries. And then the spousal benefit goes away.
At any age.
At any age.
Now,
right.
A survivor, if the guy dies, she can remarry after age 60.
Right.
But as long as the ex is still alive, she cannot remarry at any age. If she does, she has to hook her horse to a new cart, so to speak.
Hook the cart to a new horse. You don't. Hook her cart to a new horse. The horse is the worker earning the money.
What is the difference between hooking a horse to a new cart or a new cart to a new horse or an old horse to a new cart? What did I say that was wrong? She has to hook her horse to a new cart.
Because the horse does the work. That's where the analogy comes from. The horse is doing the work, providing benefit to the cart. She's the one receiving the benefit. She's the cart. She's hooking it to a new horse if she marries. It is a difference.
You're so darn picky on your euphemisms.
Well, it's euphemism as well.
It's an M, not an N.
It's that Boston accent.
No, it's you see where I'm getting at.
No, it's
you know,
right,
the cart is the one that's receiving the benefit from the horse.
So you had no clue what I was saying when I said she hooked her horse to a new cart.
No idea. It means nothing to me.
All right, so if she remarries, she's going to hook her cart, Pete, to a new horse.
Exactly.
I understand now.
Perfect.
But if she gets divorced again...
She can pick whatever cart she wants.
She can pick whatever horse she wants. She's the cart. She's the cart.
Okay.
Her bank account is the cart.
Let's go to the second part of the question so we can get off this.
So, yes.
Is this the same horse that was beat to death? That's what I want to know.
I'd love to know that question, too. So, yes, she's entitled. And the second part was, does it reduce the ex-spouse's benefit? No, absolutely not. His benefit is untouched. He actually doesn't even need to know that she's filed for a benefit. It doesn't affect his benefit in any way. These are what are called auxiliary benefits or extra benefits. And the claiming of such benefits does not reduce the base original benefit that is his earned benefit.
Right, his benefit will not be reduced, which stands in stark contrast to military pensions and other government pensions. When exes collect on those, it does reduce the benefit of the recipient spouse, mm-hmm. whereas Social Security will not. And that's an important aspect to remember. And that's why we're asked that an awful lot, Chris. Is this going to reduce my exes? Or we're asked by the exes, is this going to reduce mine if my spouse claims on me? Because they think their Social Security is going to be reduced.
And maybe they're remarried, so they have a current spouse that's going to collect. And then they find out their ex-spouse is also going to collect.
And they think they're going to get nothing.
It's double dipping or something. And no, it's their
free-for-all. Right, because if you collect a government pension, be it FERS or CSRS, or if you collect a military pension, you have to be married for 10 years in the case of a military pension as well. But if your ex collects on your military pension, they will take some of it. Where, in other words, the military doesn't say, okay, here, ex, you can have some, and here, military guy, you get all of yours. It's reduced.
Whereas it's not a dollar for dollar reduction.
Right.
But
whereas in Social Security, mm-hmm. there is no reduction.
Correct.
So it is a little different in the case of Social Security. But do not worry, people claiming on your ex. They won't even know. In the case of divorce, they won't even know that you applied, and it is not going to reduce their benefit. Okay, so those were the two questions we got over the past week.
Well, I'm glad we got those taken care of right here at the front. Now we have three more segments that we have to try to fill with something.
Wade.
Oh, Wade's.
Professor Wade.
Yeah, Professor Wade.
Well, that's excellent.
And the update on what's new with helpingmysocialsecurity.com.
Excellent. So we have about a minute left. You want to prep people for what's coming up? Or?
Well, what's coming up is, again, if you knew you were going to start the commercial right away, why did you?
Because we play it for a minute while we
Well, didn't you want to give the hint for the song? Coming up on Retirement and IRA Show, we're going to do the...
number three song 40 years ago this week. The hint, the singers of the number three song are three brothers who had their first musical success in Australia.
Oh, the Bee Gees.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Right.
Wouldn't that be the Bee Gees?
And maybe it's true that they do all speak with a high-pitched voice.
Yeah. Well, this would be proof.
That would be proof.
So when we come back, Jim's already named it, the Bee Gees, which is true. We'll see if Pete can identify the song. But this is the Retirement IRA Show.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. Uh-oh. Because this is 75. Isn't this right? Because I don't know what you're talking about, but this is right around that John Travolta dancing show.
Oh, yeah.
Saturday Night Fever. No, Saturday Night Fever.
Okay.
So I bet you it's a Saturday Night Fever song.
Well, we'll see if you're right in just a minute. So we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is the number three song 40 years ago this week here in America. I don't know about in Australia. Jim was right. That is the Bee Gees. Pete, did you pick up on the title of that song?
Oh, I certainly did. Thank you very much. I didn't hear all the lyrics, but I think Jive Talk, they worked that in there at one point.
Yep. Jive Talk In.
Talk In.
Is not it Talk Jive In? Talk. Talk In.
Sure.
Yeah.
Were they
jive
saying?
Talking.
Oh, okay. That must be that Australian
it's that
twist
accent,
to it.
Yeah.
Threw
Goodbye.
Me off. There we go.
I didn't realize you thought that all Australians spoke like the Bee Gees. But that explains it now. I get it.
You get it.
So you can keep saying goodbye or whatever you're doing. It's like you had helium or something.
Do you think somewhere in Australia there are three guys doing a finance show there trying to say good day like an American?
I don't know. How do they make fun of the way we speak?
I don't know. I'm not from Australia. But I imagine they do.
I would think so. Yeah. I'm not really making fun of them. We're just
making fun of Jim.
Imitating them in some way, I guess.
Making fun of me, making their Australian impersonation. But I wonder if they do American impersonations.
Well, some of them do, because some of them are movie stars, and they do a movie,
true.
And they don't
Mel
sound...
Mel Gibson doesn't sound Australian at all.
Not at all.
And that other guy there.
Keith Urban.
Crow.
What?
Russell Crowe.
Russell, okay.
He's Australian, isn't he?
I don't recall, but maybe.
Isn't he?
I don't remember. I don't know if I ever knew.
Nicole Kidman. She's in movies and doesn't...
Is she Australian?
Yes.
Right, and of course, your favorite, Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah, she can speak without an Australian accent.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to look up Russell Crowe. I think he's Australian as
well. I don't
think
we need to answer those kinds of questions on this show.
We're gonna stop.
You usually Google
everything
in the middle of a show. Why can't I Google
something?
Yeah,
but the show doesn't stop when I'm Googling things. The show's gonna stop here completely because you have the questions from Dr. Wade covering them up with your iPad.
Oh, he's not Australian.
New Zealand?
Yes. Yeah. He's a New Zealander.
He's probably he was offended that you thought he was Australian.
Wow. He's my age.
Damn. Wow.
That young, huh?
He's a wee bit more successful than me. I'll give him that much. All right. Yeah, he's from New Zealand.
He seems much younger.
Do I?
No, he seems much younger.
Really?
I think so.
It's probably Botox.
Is that your...
It's not my secret. My secret
Wait
is
a minute.
Just no wife.
Have you noticed something?
Uh-oh. What? What?
Jim's got gray hairs starting.
Oh no!
Oh yes.
Where?
On your temple area.
My
right
temple
here.
Area.
Yeah.
I'll cut it off.
You're going to be busy. There's at least 40 or 50. They're starting to turn right there.
Really?
Yeah. But see that expresses wisdom.
It's either that or there's the excess gel crusted up over there.
I think you got to go with the look. You know, it adds
He's not
a perception of wisdom and experience. And
we've all tried to halt the progress of time, but it doesn't work. So.
Well, when I get the salt and pepper look, I get the salt. Will you get away from me?
Just Just making sure. I'm pretty sure. If you look under the right light, you'll see it.
All right, I'll look. I mean, it should, after this many years, start
You'd
to
think
turn
so,
gray.
After all these years.
Exactly.
I think it's all started since your birthday last week.
Of which, I might add, a we precipitous celebrated. Lack of gifts were provided to me by a certain amount of people
same,
in this room.
You got the
I
same
I got the same
gifts
amount of gifts as
year.
Last year, right, which is a big Zippo.
Maybe you ought to advertise it a little bit more.
I believe I signed a very gracious card that was delivered to you, was it not?
That's a card. Talking about the gifts.
We have
something
we went
tangible.
Out of our way and we wrote personalized messages.
No, you didn't go
it.
Out of your way at all. Someone handed you the card.
No.
And you signed it. Chris.
I delivered a personalized message.
Was Happy it? Birthday, Chris.
No. I deliberated over that message for quite some time.
Hopefully
I
not
invested
on my,
a lot.
Hopefully not when you were supposed to be working for
no.
me.
No. It's on
so
the
you
way
took
out.
The card home with you?
No.
And deliberated there?
No. I deliberated.
I just
as I
want
was...
to say, Pete, you didn't sign my card.
Oh, he wasn't
and
here.
There were no gifts. No well, gifts. Nothing
there,
of value.
The card.
A birthday cake?
Huh?
You received a birthday cake.
Sarah bought it.
Who? What does it matter? Why do we have to label everything?
Well, the card I would have signed, but it was with the email, so I didn't get either
We all
one.
Contributed in our own way.
Which was precious little, I may add.
I don't remember my message, but it was... profound. I'm
sure, sure it was, and very encouraging and uplifting.
I believe it was Happy Birthday, Chris.
No, it wasn't. I can't believe you didn't even read it.
I did read it. It was so brief, I can't remember it.
Okay.
Might have said something like, pay me more, Chris.
Well, clearly you didn't receive that message.
All
so,
right.
Dr. Wade, what's
Dr.
his
Wade.
First? Are we going to start with number 7?
We could.
Remember, everyone who hasn't listened before now. We are going to list the...
According to Dr.
According
Wade.
According to Dr. Wade, who sounds like a talk show host.
Dr. Wade.
Dr. Wade.
He is a professor of retirement income planning mm-hmm. and in the PhD program.
I don't think they have a PhD program. There's only one financial planning PhD program in the country now, and it's at Texas Tech.
Then I will read what it says. Wade D. Foe mm-hmm. is a professor of retirement income in the PhD program. Mm. In financial services and retirement
All
planning
financial services, yeah.
at the American College in Bern, Ma, Pennsylvania.
Okay. That's a new program. It's not the same as the Texas Tech program, but yeah. Yep. There's very few of those.
So you satisfied that he has a PhD?
Oh, I know he did. But teaching in a program is
okay.
different.
Yeah. Well, he is teaching mm-hmm. in the PhD
program. Program in financial services.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Perfect.
So according to him... Mm-hmm. There are 7 risks that retirees face. He begins, well, he doesn't begin, in the middle of his article. He writes, those entering retirement are crossing the threshold into an entirely foreign way of living mm-hmm. where they are vulnerable.
At risk.
At risk to several risks more uniquely felt by retirees. Mm.
And those risks would be?
Well, do you want me to list all 7 or should
no,
we do one, at a,
one
time?
At a time?
That's what I'm saying. We're going to lead into this.
Go ahead.
So the whole point is he is talking about some of the risks that retirees face. Mm-hmm. Now, before we jump into this, I will say, Chris, when I first read this article, I looked at it because these are a lot of the very risks that our process, we call our process the Secure Retirement Income Process, what mm-hmm. we do. For people who work with us to help them plan for retirement. Mm-hmm. Our process addresses these risks and a lot of other processes, I'm sure. It's not that what we do is unique onto ourselves. It's we've refined it over the past decade to work what we feel quite well. But there are other advisors and other individuals, Pete, who are also trying to address these risks. But these are all risks that we do address. And one thing I want our listeners to know, one thing that I go to great lengths to let people understand is it's very important to look at your retirement not through the eyes of a 60-year-old, but through the eyes of a 70, 80, and 90-year-old because you are going to age. And the unfortunate thing is you are not going to age well. But it is important your retirement plan does. Uh-huh.
And if you don't age, it doesn't matter because you don't need to have a retirement plan
right.
anymore.
If you pass away early, right. then it doesn't matter.
It's but, what you're really planning for is the chance, and for people it's highly likely, that you'll live into your 70s, 80s, 90s, and possibly beyond. That's where the planning needs to take place, and it needs to be a plan that can be handled and managed and followed.
Easily.
Easily.
And that's the key. We've mm-hmm. talked about this, people, on the show many times. Now, before I get into Professor Wade's article, I just want to opine for a second because we have talked, Pete, repeatedly, and you have probably seen this in your practice, Pete, because you do estate planning.
Right.
And because of that, you deal with death at the ultimate end. And we know as we go through retirement, we will age. And we have talked, people, repeatedly of another study done by other academic
teachers.
And what they did is in Harvard did a study, the psychology and economics department of Harvard, we have spoken about this, wanted to find out, Pete, why seemingly intelligent older Americans, we're talking about Americans in their 80s and 90s, but people in their younger years who were engineers and physicians and attorneys and just generally smart people, why do people fall victim to financial fraud in their older years? Or why do people in their older years find it difficult to understand concepts that 20 years earlier they could master? So as they did the study, they found that the part of our brain that not necessarily makes financial decisions, but helps you understand financial concepts. That part of our brain takes a while to develop and is one of the first parts of our brain that begins to degrade. And they started plotting and graphing it as they started studying segments of the population, and they found the graph looks like the traditional bell curve that we all know of. It starts very shallow and then rises and then peaks like a U, an upside down U, and then starts coming back down and then grows shallow again. And what they found is Americans in their younger years, in their 20s and 30s, are generally not making the wisest financial decisions. We often hear that if an 18-year-old inherits money, they're probably going to blow it right away on something that to an 18-year-old was brilliant, but to a 40 or 50-year-old wasn't too bright. As they plotted this, they realized that we get to a certain age when we are at the pinnacle, or at least the parts of our brain are at their most developed, the parts that help us make rational financial decisions. And after a certain age, it begins to degrade. Now, it's not a cliff. It's not that after this age, you become as dumb as a brick when it comes to financial matters. But as you age, it begins to degrade. That pinnacle age, we have said repeatedly, Chris, is?
53.
Now, that means I've got 14 more years, so I've got a very long time to go.
Before death?
No, before I hit my pinnacle age.
Oh, yeah. That's gym math.
Perhaps 14 or 1, I don't know. Somewhere
14 months maybe.
Somewhere between 1 year and 14 years I will be at my pinnacle age of 53.
Perfect.
But it does not mean at 54 I'm going to drop off the face of the earth, Pete, but what it does mean is we are aging. And as we age, our body ages and so does our mind. It begins to slow down. And I share this with people constantly, that the key, we're going to go through Professor Wade's 7 risks, but the key, you said you wanted a solution, Chris. The solution is to have a plan, is to have a process. It's to have a plan and a process that will age well, because you are not. We know that. It's not that we're going to retire in our 60s and say, oh, God, in 40 more years, I'm going to do this. We know in 40 more years you hope to still be around, but if you are, you're going to be bedridden or you're going to be in a wheelchair totally dependent on others. We are aging. It is winding down, so to speak. So the way to address these risks, there's going to be seven risks. Yes, there's going to be some things we can do directly, but to me, the much more important aspect of these risks is to have a plan that will age well. And by that, Chris and I mean, make sure you have a complete understanding and that you have put together every aspect of your income plan. Make sure you have enough of what we call secure income, Social Security, pension, and income annuity. Make sure you have enough secure income to cover your required expenses, those expenses that if you don't cover, you'll suffer an economic, financial, or medical hardship. Make sure you have all your estate documents in place. And not just, Pete, the estate documents for death, but the estate documents for incapacitation.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's part of it is, in fact, estate planning is not strictly death planning. It's really incapacity and death planning because for most of us, there will be a period of incapacity prior to death when we're dependent upon others. We'll lose the ability to manage and understand the financial aspects of our lives, and we're going to need to have a plan and a person in place to take care of that for our benefit.
Exactly, and that's what we try to get people who come in and talk to us to understand. Retirement people, I can't stress this enough. It's not investing. There is so much more than investing. Do not confuse an investment advisor, someone who simply wants to take your money and have you pay them for the pleasure of growing it or doing something with it. Don't confuse an investment advisor with a true planner. A planner needs to help you put in place, yes, an income plan, Chris. Do we not need that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you may need management of investments as part of the entire plan, but it's just a small slice.
Exactly.
So many more pieces involved.
Exactly. We have to make sure your estate issue is in place, and it's not a will. It's not just a will. You're dead and gone. Let the other people fight it out. You don't have a will, big deal. What's going to hurt you more isn't the will. You're dead. It's going to be if you need a guardianship or a conservatorship, you're incapacitated, you can't take care of yourself, you can't make decisions, you need other people to help you, you have to have, Pete, those documents in place.
Well, in fact, the guardianship and conservatorship are the default. That is, if you do nothing, you're faced with going through a court process. We call it a living probate. To have a guardian and conservator, guardian is the person's in charge of your medical care, your living location, things like that, and the conservator is to handle your money. And if you let that go and don't do anything, then you're going to be faced with a court proceeding that could run $3,000 to $6,000 in attorney's fees just to walk it through the court with no opposition.
And the judge might come to a completely different conclusion than what you would have preferred.
Absolutely.
So wouldn't it be better for you to control this ahead of time rather
Absolutely.
Than leave it up to the whims of the court system? Yeah.
So your process, your plan for addressing Professor Wade's seven issues that we will get to is, yes, it's investments, it's income, it is estate, it is, as Pete calls it, living probate, or having the protections in place if you become incapacitated. But it's also having a sound tax plan in place. And by a tax plan, we mean, do we have to do any type of pre-RMD planning? Should we look at reducing the size of your retirement accounts prior to age 70 and a half to reduce RMDs? If we reduce RMDs, can we optimize your Social Security or keep it from being taxed? Or what do you do as you start going through this incapacitation, Pete, and you start amassing a lot of medical bills? Can we then use some of the deductions on those medical bills to offset income from other aspects? So you have to have a tax plan in place. And you also need to have a long-term care plan in place. And we've talked about long-term care insurance on this show before. I want our listeners to know, and I keep trying to drill this into the heads of people who I come in contact with, long-term care insurance is not health insurance. It's not. It's housing. When I say we have to make a plan for long-term care, I am not saying we have to make a plan for health. That's where we have another part of our practice that helps people understand Medicare, Prescription Part D, Medicare Part A, Medicare Part B, Medicare Part C, which are called Advantage plans, Medigap plans. That's the health aspect, Chris. That's the medical insurance aspect. When I talk long-term care with my clients, I'm talking health. housing. And so many people, Chris, come to us and say, oh, our house is paid for, so our housing costs in retirement aren't going to be an issue.
Housing and daily living, I guess.
Functions of daily living. Exactly. As you age, people, remember, don't look at your retirement through the eyes of a 62-year-old. Look at it through the eyes of a 72, 82, 92-year-old. As you age, at some point in time, for some people that's in their 70s, for others it's not till their 80s, but at some point in time, you will contemplate, Pete, moving, because you are going to need assistance with your housing. You're going to need either people taking care of you, or you're not going to be able to handle your house anymore, or you're just going to be in a position where getting around and cooking and taking care of yourself is more difficult, and you want to be in a place that provides a lot of that. That's when I'm talking about long-term care. Long-term care is to help put in place a plan for your housing, and as Chris alluded to, daily living, which to me is part of your housing expense. So if you don't have a process or a plan in place incorporating all these aspects and get it in place in your 60s and automate the whole process, you're not going to have a plan that ages well. Because again, you need a plan that ages well, because for the most part, you're not. So I think, Chris, that is the first way to address many of the pitfalls that Wade is going to talk about. But we're going to begin, and we're going to go through them, and we'll start listing them and explaining to them, and maybe point out to people some of these pitfalls can be addressed in a sound plan, Pete. But some of them you're going to see, Chris, can't be. And we have to look at them differently. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Perfect.
So the first one that he listed, and it makes sense because we're often presented with this, Chris. People will come to us and say, look, here's what I want to do, guys. I want you to help us run a retirement analysis. I'm 55 now. I'm going to work to 60. And then at 60, I'm going to quit the job I have now because I can't stand it. But I'm going to go back to work, and I'm going to work part-time to 70 doing something different.
Mm. I can see the risk coming right now.
And the risk that Wade points out, you may not get a job.
Right. Or be able to physically be able to do a job until 70.
Exactly. He says you have to prepare for the reduced earnings capacity mm-hmm. that aging brings on. We sometimes have people who don't want to leave one job. They just want to do their current job to 70. Oh, I want to work to 70. I want to work to 65. I want to work to 62. The number one reason retirees retire, medical issue. They yep. can't work anymore for one reason or another. And that's what Wade is pointing out as his first risk. He doesn't say that these are listed in order of importance. He just said you have to prepare for the fact that you may think you're going to work to 62, 65, or 70, but for a medical reason, you can't.
Or a downturn in the economy. You just jobs in your field of expertise may not be easily had. There's all kinds of reasons why you wouldn't be able to work as long. And we've had people like that, absolutely, that never intended to quit or be done with their work when they actually had to be because of a downsizing issue or a decline in the economy, and that sector really took a hit and that sort of thing. So that absolutely happens frequently. So absolutely something to have on the radar and maybe have a backup plan or a real understanding of the feasibility of your plan if you cannot generate that income.
There's very little we can do. Our process does not help if you lose your job or are no longer employable. There is no plan you can put in place. Yeah, there's unemployment insurance if you get laid off, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But that's more of what we call a societal benefit to help support you. But what Wade is saying, the first thing, because we see it a lot, Pete, and I'm sure you have as well with your clients, they think they're going to work to a certain age, but for a medical reason or a layoff, and as much as we want to deny in this country that age discrimination exists, I think age discrimination is probably more prevalent than a lot of the isms that keep getting the attention in the press, that there's an ism for everything now. But I think age discrimination discrimination is one such ism that is often glossed over and not talked about. But I have two particular people that I'm working with, and both of them left the workforce, one involuntarily and the other voluntarily, in their early 60s. Both were female. Both have been looking for work, and neither one of them can find them. And they, if you talk to them to this day, they'll tell you it's because of my age. Now, you can't ask age, but we all know they look at a resume, or when they come in for the interview, they can't get hired.
So they look for that gray hair that may be starting to show on the
temples. That may be starting to show a little bit on me, yeah. The only fortunate thing is my boss, real nice guy.
Really?
Real nice. Sweet really? Guy. If you ever met him, sweet, sweet gentleman.
Very generous, too.
He's not going to be around forever,
humble,
though,
generous, attractive, available. I mean, any euphemism or adjective you want to use to describe him, wonderful man. So I don't worry about my position. All jokes aside, no, I don't worry about my position because I have a very strong life asset. In other words, my life, because it's my job, has a fairly decent career option. And even if something happened to me and I couldn't work, I have a very profitable and viable business that could still provide support. But not everybody has that luxury, Pete. So I think what Wade is trying to say is every listener has to look, Chris, at their own situation and be prepared for the fact that they may be laid off or may lose their job and not be able to monetize their life asset any longer. And that could have been a big part of their retirement plan.
Perfect. So we've come to the end of segment two of the Retirement IRA Show. Coming up after this short break, we'll be at the number two song 40 years ago this week, The Hint. The number two band was also known for their 1976 hit, The Things We Do for Love. I wasn't aware that they sang that song, but I just have to trust the hint. So this is the Retirement IRA Show. We'll find out who that is. I will tell you that we have heard the song before, so you'll recognize it. But we'll be back right after this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show. Welcome back to the Retirement IRA Show. That is, once again, the number two song 40 years ago this week. Holding on from last week at number two. So this is the second week at number two. Two times two is four. Yes.
Jim, very good.
What's the artist?
10cc. And that would be 10 cubic centimeters.
Very nice.
And I'm not in love.
That's very perfect.
We're pretty on top of it.
I love that song. I've already said that 12 times.
It's been number two for about the past 52 weeks.
I don't know. Did it ever make it to number one?
I don't think so. It's been in the countdown for a very long time.
Because I don't think they're going to...
I'm going to go out on a limb here. Not even on a limb. I'm going to make a prediction.
Uh-oh. Yeah?
That Bee Gees song stays in the countdown for quite some time.
That's too bad.
Because that John Travolta Saturday Night Dancing fever... show.
Saturday Night Dancing Fever show?
Was a movie that was just huge. And there's going to be a few Bee Gees songs from
probably
that soundtrack. So we're just prepping our listeners that the top three countdown is probably going to include the Bee Gees for quite some time. Because this
just
is their
so
heyday.
You know, I've had a...
The 70s is their heyday.
I've had a listener tell me in no uncertain terms that they would much prefer the songs from 35 years ago.
I received that email as well, mm-hmm. and that listener, mm-hmm. He was not, it
George.
Was a suggestion, mm-hmm. George. Mm-hmm. I read the email. Mm-hmm. I know the listener.
And you're completely dismissing
I have
that
spoken
person.
To that listener, mm-hmm. and he wasn't saying on no uncertain terms, he just made a suggestion to get the heck out of the 70s.
He said very clearly, I much prefer the songs from 35 years ago.
He wanted us to move to the 80s, which means, Pete, because we may have a format change here.
Uh-oh.
Going to hit you guys with it. I always hit you guys live on the radio. Just to throw it out there.
Yeah.
Because when you got said email, of which you were alluding to from that fine listener.
Yes.
We had Justin in the room when I was reading it. Mm-hmm. And Justin had a suggestion, which I have to give Justin credit, could be a good idea.
I can't wait to hear this.
Instead of the top three songs in America 40 years ago this week, as we lead up to what's new on helpwithmysoulsecurity.com.
I think I know where you're going.
The number one song in America 40, 30, and 20 years ago.
But that doesn't tie in to
about
your
40 or 35 and...
No, absolutely not. But that was Justin's idea.
Well, I think we ought to go further back than that if we're going to do
50
that.
50 years ago?
Oh, well, how about this? It was the 80th anniversary of Social Security.
That's right.
Let's do 80, 40, and 35. Those are all numbers that...
I don't even know if we could get the number one song in America 80 years ago.
Certainly we can.
And we can get the recording?
Yeah, they're all public domain now.
Everything's on the internet.
Right. I'm confident we could do that. Now, 180 years ago might be a challenge, but 80? Totally.
80, 40, and 35.
We could. That might be a good compromise. We would certainly stump a few people with the 80.
I was going to say.
song from 80 years ago.
All right, well, we could try that. That could be the new format change starting next week. Starting next segment.
Next segment. The number one song 80 years ago?
Well, we'll have the number one song 35 years ago in the next segment. No, 40 years ago.
40 years ago.
40, yes. Okay. So maybe we'll do that next, beginning in the next segment, people. That's a pretty good idea. Chris, it'll be your responsibility to get the number one song in America 80 years ago as well as the recording.
Fine. I can do that.
I bet you it's going to sound very scratchy.
We'll use the remastered one.
I don't know if they've remastered music from 80 years ago.
Oh, you'd be surprised. Maybe I can find a modern recording of that song. Would that be acceptable?
Now you're pushing it. Somebody's doing a cover of a song from 80 years ago. There's going to be a lot of instrumentals.
True.
Not a lot of electric guitars.
So that would have been
not a lot of electric guitars.
Yeah.
No.
So that would have been
1935.
Yeah.
There's good
music.
Type music.
There's good music.
Pardon me?
Glenn Miller-ish type music.
Yeah. Yeah, the big bands.
Yeah.
In fact, if you listen to pirate radio in the mornings, from, I don't know, 6 to 7 or so, or somewhere in there, they do the
just to give
big
you
band
a
song.
Just to give you a hint of the biggest hit songs in 1935, we have Cheek to Cheek.
Oh, yeah.
By Fred Astaire. Lovely to Look At by Eddie Duchesne. Yep. On the Good Ship Lollipop.
Oh, yeah.
By Shirley Temple.
Shirley Temple.
And Can the Circle Be Unbroken by the Carter Family. And then Silent Night from Bing Crosby. Not in the summer, but this year.
Interesting. Okay, so maybe we'll do that to... actually, it would tie into Social Security more. 80, 40, and 35.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're going to need more.
Actually, the 40 is the least... The least interesting of that. Just so you know.
I kind of like it. 40 elapsed years.
It has nothing to do with the current way it works, though. So.
No, but it began with 40 elapsed years. Mm-hmm. So we're elapsing 40 years.
I know. I've heard the story.
Perfect.
Okay.
So what are we going to do in January when it's no longer the 80th anniversary? We're going to do the number one song 81 years ago?
Yeah. We go back to the start of Social Security.
Wow. So we're moving in the opposite direction. Every
we
year
we continue 80 years ago.
No, we could do 81 years ago, then 82 years ago, then 83.
Well, but then we're going to keep playing the same songs every year, just so you know.
No, we wouldn't.
Yes, you would.
Not if we go back 82 years and then 83 years.
We're
going
to be doing that 2 years from now, though, so that's going to
That's
so
right.
We're
going
to play songs. It'll be songs from 1935 every year.
Yes. Over and over and over.
The number one song, the year Social Security started, something like that. It's all good.
So we'll have to go the other way.
Can we work this out maybe off the air?
Okay. So expect next week, people, this new beginning. All because of Chris. So this will be interesting.
No, all because of George in New Jersey.
George in New Jersey. Okay. So back,
but I'm not sure he wanted 80 years ago. No, he wanted from 35. The 80s.
Yes,
he wanted music from the 80s, which is very different than 80 years ago. So,
well, he'll get one song from the 80s.
We'll do that, and that'll appease, I think, practically everyone, because we'll get from... There'll be people listening, maybe, that were around in 1935 who will reminisce and maybe get up and dance a little.
Well, we have 80-year-old listeners.
Well, they would
I
have
just don't
just
know
been
if they
born,
remember. Right. They're not
so we would need
remember.
Like 92-year-old.
95-year-old listeners, yeah, to really appreciate 80 years ago. But I am curious. I'm interested in hearing a song from 80 years ago that's like historical.
Mm, yes. And Shirley Temple, it's hysterical as well.
Yeah, I remember I Shirley Temple singing
funny.
The Good Ship Lollipop. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dancing with Bojangles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so can we get back into
number two?
Mm-hmm. Actually, no. We should give a little bit of contact information if people want to work with us. This isn't one of our stronger radio shows, so I'm not quite sure why they would want to. But people would probably enjoy working with us. We are practicing professionals in this field, and Pete is an estate planning attorney with an office in Greeley, Fort Collins, Denver, and all points in between.
Yes.
And my office isn't in Fort Collins, but Pete, why don't you explain how people can reach you should they want to reach out with any type of estate planning question?
Sure. They can call the law firm. The law firm I'm with is Cohen, Payton, and Payne, as Jim mentioned, with offices in Greeley and Fort Collins and Denver. And the phone number is 970-339-3500. That's 970-339-3500, or on the web. Independent of the show website, you can reach me at peterscotthelps.com. That's PETERSCOTTHELPS.com. And we offer a cup of coffee, a bottle of water, and a second opinion, and also a first opinion if they care to on a complimentary basis.
Any pastries along with that?
Whatever might be left over from a firm meeting, but that's pretty rare because donuts and pastries go pretty quick. So probably not. But if they care to bring their own, we'd be happy to share.
Okay, perfect. And then anybody who wants to come in for what we call into my office, coffee and a second opinion, that's probably the more common and the most popular element, I think, to the show, Chris.
I agree.
Is our coffee and a second opinion.
You think so?
That alone is worth listening to the show for.
And what about pastries?
Do you have a wide selection of coffees?
We do.
Yeah. And pastries, too?
Negative.
No pastries.
Oh. No pastries.
Oh.
Pastries wouldn't last around here with a certain someone to sit to the left of me. That would be you, fat boy.
I'm not a big pastry guy.
If you want to make fun of my grays, I'm going to make fun of you.
Okay. You should try it. We've never had pastries here. We should try and see how it goes.
Serve pastries to our clients?
We'll just have them in the office in general.
Then you would eat them. And
so
Melissa
would
be even more upset at me. Okay, but we offer what we call a coffee and a second opinion. It's a chance for you to come in because we get it. Now, some people will email us, but on live shows, we get a lot of people who don't enjoy Pete calling a live radio show. And for one reason or another, they want to protect their privacy. They don't want to be heard over the air. And they much prefer to come into the office. So we do offer a complimentary coffee and a second opinion. It's a chance for you to sit and meet with us and ask us questions in a more private setting. And one of the more popular elements of our coffee and a second opinion is what we actually call an annuity call. Now, we are going to be working on some shows in the not-too-distant future. I know we're trying to bring on another attorney colleague of yours first. But once we can outline all of that, I hope to reserve a whole series of shows on annuities and explain to people what annuities are because they are incredibly complex. And a lot of people have no clue what they have. And that's one of the things we offer through the Coffee and a Second Opinion is an annuity call. It gives us the ability to call the insurance company, put them on speakerphone, and ask a series of questions directly to the company, not to the agent or broker who sold you the annuity, but to the company itself. And what I'm really looking for, Pete, is part of the first things I ever do, if someone ever comes in and says, hey, I have this income annuity, or I have this fixed annuity, or I just have this item, and I want you to tell me what I have, Jim. The first question I ask them, Pete, Why did you buy it? And oftentimes people look at me and they have no clue, which tells me they didn't buy the annuity. They were sold the annuity. So now I have to try to evaluate what are the features of the annuity and does it match what the person has shared with me are their needs or concerns. And the best way of doing that is to interview the person first, get a picture from them of, well, I thought it was going to do this, or I thought it would generate this much in income, or I thought I could do this, that, or the other thing with it. And then get the insurance company on the phone and confirm if it can do those things or not. So that's one of the aspects that we offer through my firm. And what you can do is go to Jim Helps. That's Jim, HELPS.com, and click the Contact Us button, and all the information is there on how to get a hold of us. Okay, back to what we were talking about before the break, and that is the pitfalls of retirement planning. And we're talking about an article that a finance professor from the American College of Financial Planning, his name is Wade Fou.
That's a new pronunciation, but that'll work.
Fou?
Manchu?
Fou, Fou?
Fum.
Fou. No, what did you say it was? Fou?
Fou.
That's what I said, Fou. You said I pronounced it differently.
No, well, for you, it was different. Because you've been saying faux.
But I just said faux now,
but
didn't I?
Faux is like faux jewelry. It's sort of
that's
phony.
That's F-A-U-X.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah, this is P-H-A-U.
Yes, it is.
Oh, P-F-A-U.
P-F, yes.
Yeah, not P-H. P-F-A-U.
Mm-hmm.
Faux.
Yes.
Okay. Wade.
Dr. Wade.
Dr. Wade. Okay, I am going to combine two and three.
Oh, okay.
Because I think Wade was talking about the same thing twice. What he put as number two is spending constraints. Mm-hmm. What he put as number three was heightened investment risk. And he explained in number two, and he said, and I quote, "While investments were once a place for savings and accumulation, a retiree must try to create an income stream from their assets, and this places an important constraint on their investment decisions." That's a whole mouthful of what he's saying there. Because in number three, he says heightened investment risk. And Chris, he talks specifically about a risk we have spoken about, and he calls it exactly what we call it, sequential risk. Mm-hmm. And he goes on to say in retirement, losses during the beginning half of your retirement can decimate a retirement income plan. Because if you are withdrawing assets from a portfolio and that portfolio is dropping and you continue to draw from it, you can cause yourself to run out of money far faster than you ever imagined. So I think both of those essentially are covering the same risk. You have to look at your investments differently. That's what Wade is saying. He's saying it at an academic level. I'm trying to say it at a normal person's level. And what I try to get people to understand is if you are managing a portfolio as a retiree, the same way you managed it as a 30, 40, or 50-year-old, you could very well be setting yourself up for failure. That a distribution portfolio, a portfolio that you are spending from. Remember, people, you can't take it with you. You don't need money in heaven. Everything's for free. Well, it should be. I don't think God's doing this for profit. But you can't take your money with you. And the idea is to get people to spend. But the risks you face, Pete, is either spending too quickly and running out of money, or too slowly and not living a lifestyle you could have. So what Wade is trying to explain here is you have to look at your investments differently. I can't stress that enough. And that's what he's trying to get people to understand. And you especially have to pay attention to sequential risk. Because I got news for you. When stocks fall or an investment, whether it's stocks, whether it's gold, whether it's real estate, whether it's commodities, whatever you happen to be investing in, Pete, if you are 30 years old and it drops in value, It's a sale. It's not going to affect you. You have tremendous risk capacity, assuming that 30-year-old Pete is saving for retirement in 35 years. Now, if that 30-year-old is saving for their first-time home purchase in 2 years, yeah, a 30% drop in their portfolio is going to decimate them. But that portfolio needs to be managed differently. We're talking retirement here. To a 30-year-old, a 30, 40, 50% drop in the price of their investment is a sale. But to a 60-year-old, it could be devastation. And you have to recognize that. And you have to begin to position your portfolio and protect it. One of the strategies, Chris, we have talked about repeatedly for combating this type of risk is what we call the bucket strategy. It's to take all your retirement assets and start looking at them as different sleeves with different purposes or different buckets, hence the analogy bucket strategy. And you can have, we call it bucket one, bucket two, bucket three, and bucket four. And we get people to understand that bucket one is what we call the liquidity bucket, Pete. It is the money that you are going to spend over the next 2 or 3 years. And if you've done a proper retirement analysis, you have a fairly good understanding, barring any unforeseen emergencies, of how much money you're going to need in addition to your pension, Social Security, and income annuity payments. Do you need any money beyond that? If so, how much per year? And we recommend in bucket one, 2 to 3 years of money in bucket one, which is held in a bank or an FDIC insured account or in laddered CDs and something very safe and relatively very liquid. That's bucket one. Bucket two, we get people to understand, is what we call the principal protected bucket. This money, in conjunction with bucket three, which we call your investment bucket, bucket two and bucket three are designed to replenish, Pete, the spending from bucket one. Now, bucket three is the investment pool that Professor Wade is talking about. But bucket two is a unique bucket that we advocate strongly in the office, and we call that the principal protected bucket. This should be money such as a fixed annuity or a fixed indexed annuity or laddered bank CDs or other product that promises a return of your principal. That no matter what is happening, the market is up, the market is down, interest rates are up, interest rates are down, your principal is protected. You will receive a certain amount of interest every year, but your principal is protected. Why is that important? Sequential risk. That's the risk that Wade is talking about here, Chris. Because sequential risk will do what?
Causes your portfolio to plummet. And at the same time that you're withdrawing money, it's kind of like a double whammy, I call it. Not only are you feeding off of the portfolio to live, but the market, if it's down, is hammering your portfolio as well. And it can cause essentially irreversible damage.
It can.
The corpus of your portfolio is being reduced so that it isn't really there to come back. Let's pretend the market decides to go back up again. You know, goes up and down all the time. But if you've drawn money out, there's not as much in there to go back up. So you end up with less in the long
run. It's a phenomenon called dollar cost averaging is what we call that. Reverse dollar cost averaging.
Reverse.
Because everybody's heard, Pete, of dollar cost averaging. But reverse dollar cost averaging is what Chris just described. And what I mean by that is this. Just pretend for people in a moment that you didn't have separate buckets. You didn't have a bucket one with 2 to 3 years of liquid payments in it, of liquid money, of expenses you are expected to incur for the first 2 or 3 years. If that wasn't there, if bucket two, the principal protected bucket, wasn't there, instead, Chris, all your money is in investments, which is what a lot of investment advisors espouse, which is what Wade is warning you here in number three and four, to watch out for that. Because if everything was in an investment bucket, and let's say your investment was trading at $10 a share. Let's say you had a certain mutual fund trading at $10 a share, and you need 1,000 shares. Excuse me, you need $1,000. So if the market is at $10 a share and you need $1,000, you have to sell 100 shares. So you sell 100 shares, you get your $1,000, and you go cover your retirement expense with it. But now if the market has dropped, and let's say it dropped like it did in the 08 crash, and it loses 50%, your $10 a share mutual fund is now trading at $5 a share. But Chris, you still need $1,000. So how many shares now are you going to have to sell?
Now you have to sell 200 instead of just 100.
Exactly. So reverse dollar cost averaging forces you to sell more of your precious shares in retirement. Remember, you only have a certain amount of shares, Pete, in retirement. You are no longer working. You're no longer saving. You're no longer adding to your money. So you now have to burn more shares as the value of those investments drop. So to help combat this, you have 2 to 3 years of expenses in bucket one. Now you have to replenish bucket one, Pete. But you don't have to replenish it at the end of year one. If you have 2 or 3 years, it gives you a little bit of flexibility. So over that 2 or 3 year time period, you look at bucket one and bucket three. Excuse me, bucket two and bucket three. If bucket three, the investment bucket, Chris, is up, you might, instead of having to sell 10 shares or 100 shares, rather, in our example, if the market is up, you might only have to sell 80 shares. So in an up market, you might take some of your profit selling less shares and move that money into bucket one. You're being a little proactive. Conversely, if the market is down, you go to bucket two, your principal protected bucket. That money, Chris, can never drop. So in a down market, to keep you from having to spend or sell some investments that have dropped, you now look at bucket two and liquidate assets from bucket two to replenish your spending pool and not suffer reverse dollar cost averaging. So again, Wade talks about that as number two and number three, but we combine them into one, even though he keeps them separate, Chris.
Right. So that music means we're coming to the end of our third segment here. When we come back from this final break, we will hear the number one song, finally, from 40 years ago this week as we lead up to our discussion about what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. So the hint for the number one song, and it is a new number one song, two of the member of this week's number one band have had great success as solo artists. A few of their hits were The Heat Is On, The Heart of the Matter, and Dirty Laundry as solo artists.
I think they're so named when we come back, bird.
Possibly. So this is a number, not a new song to the countdown, but a new number one this week. This is the Retirement and IRA Show. We will find out the name of the song and the name of the group right after we come back from this break. Welcome back to the final segment of the Retirement and IRA Show. This is the number one song from 40 years ago this week. New number one this week. One of these nights. And I think, Jim, you've figured out the artist already.
The Owls.
Close.
Different bird of prey.
Remember last week it rhymes with beagles?
Oh.
Yeah. Sure it's not one of these owls?
Different bird of prey.
So that is the Eagles. Peter, what?
Not one of these owls, one of these
knights. One of these knights. Very nice. That wasn't too difficult.
No.
That one was quite easy.
So that was the number one song 40 years ago this week as we do the countdown as a lead up to our update on what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, which is a blog that Jim and I do weekly at www.helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. where we talk about the tips, tricks, strategies, warnings, alerts.
Of Social Security.
Suggestions, planning. Social Security, claiming, rules, all those fun things. Right?
Exactly. And the reason we look back 40 years, we're not going to get into, because we may not be doing 40 years anymore. We may be doing 80, 35, and something.
Seven? I don't know.
I don't know.
Some random number.
But Chris is already hedging his bets, people. During the break, he shared with us that he cannot find the number one song in America 85 years ago.
80. 80 in 1935.
Ago.
I can find them for the year. It's hard to find weekly data. They didn't really do things quite the same way. That was 80 years ago, though.
Okay.
All the performances were live on the radio.
Sounds to me, Pete, he's trying to backtrack.
No, we're going to do it. I'll find it.
Okay.
I'll find it.
So, as we lead into what's new on helpofmysocialsecurity.com, are you ready to share with our listeners what your blog post was about? Because you wrote it.
Yes.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
Well, this week on helpofmysocialsecurity.com, we talk about spousal benefits for the unmarried. That'll blow your mind a little bit, huh?
Yeah.
So a recent rule change at Social Security has essentially redefined what they consider to be a marital relationship for purposes of spousal benefits. This would also apply to survivor benefits that you would be entitled to as being a spouse or ex-spouse of a person. But they have expanded the definition. In the past, it had been you had to be married to receive a or be entitled to a spousal benefit. But that rule has changed to also envelop those people in certain states that were in a civil union, a domestic partnership, or some other type of Jim's favorite, the reciprocal beneficiary agreement, I believe was the
reciprocal beneficiary relationship.
Relationship.
I like
that's
that.
What it was. That was the most romantic.
That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a reciprocal beneficiary relationship.
Mm-hmm. So is that like friends with benefits? Is that
only if you established it legally?
I see.
You had to declare this to the state, and this now this doesn't apply to all. And I'll get into a lot of the details in the blog post. But you might hear this and say, "Ooh, I have a I was in a civil union in XYZ state, so I must be qualified." Now that isn't always true. Social Security has essentially said these relationships will count as being married if and only if the state declared in their definition of these relationships that the survivors of the relationship were entitled to inheritance of the personal assets of the deceased person. So if the person essentially were to die intestate without a will, if the state default would be to give it to this other partner in the civil union, Social Security is going to say, that's good enough for us. We are going to say that those folks are entitled to spousal or survivor benefits as if they were married. So this has opened the door to quite a number of people who previously would not qualify for these types of benefits, but now do. And that's a rule change that came down and is effective May 19th of 2015. So this is very recent. Mm-hmm. Not many people are talking about it yet, but it is clearly spelled out. And I even provide in the blog, I provide a link to the operations manual at Social Security that describes this situation in detail. So any questions, Jim?
Nope. Excellent article.
Excellent.
I actually read it.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa!
Oh, I went a little long on that.
Sorry.
The whoa part is pretty good, though. So back to our...
Back to our
countdown.
Pitfalls of Retirement Planning by Professor Wade.
The top seven that we're only going hear four of this
no,
week?
No, we got four. We got the
There's
rest.
No way. My point is we're not going to get through all seven of them.
Oh, yes, we will.
Well, you better speed it up then.
Number four.
Mm-hmm. 19 minutes.
Number four. Spending shocks.
Sudden needs to expend money on an RV or something?
That wouldn't necessarily be a spending shock. That should hopefully be planned. You shouldn't just be all of a sudden, oh my God, we got to buy an RV. No, an RV should be planned upon. What Wade is talking about here, and he goes on to say, again, remember what I shared with you, Pete, at the beginning. We try to put a plan in place that ages well because you're not. Mm-hmm. And that's what he talks about. So many people, Chris, think, once they get to 65 and get on Medicare, everything is taken care of. Mm-hmm. that there are going to be no more unexpected medical expenses, that there are going to be no more shocks, that everything is going to be covered. You're not going to – the number one cause of bankruptcy in this country, Pete, is medical expenses. And they think once they get to 65, they don't have to worry about that. What Wade is saying is you are going to have these unexpected, unplanned for, unannounced, unknown medical and long-term care expenses, and you have to have a plan in place for them. And that's, it's again, it's a short little part of the topic, but he talks just like I do, that long-term care is about housing. He writes, you are going to have changing housing needs, repairs, and rising prescription costs. Retirees must preserve flexibility and liquidity in their assets to manage these unplanned expenses when they occur. So many people don't factor that in, Pete. And that's what I'm trying to get people to understand. You are not going to age well. And you have to make sure you maintain the liquidity for this. One of the things we're trying to do in our office is get people who come in for retirement analysis. We want to send them through long-term care underwriting as part of the planning process. Not to put them in a long-term care policy. Not everybody is sold on the idea that they want, need, or can even afford long-term care insurance. But why do you think I want to send them through underwriting?
Well, I would think to get a gauge maybe on their longevity and their health to see if they're insurable.
You hit the nail on the head. Are they insurable? Because if they're not insurable, if the insurance company is saying, look, we are not going to cover you, they'll tell us why. By law, they have to tell you why they denied you coverage. Because of X, Y, and Z, we're not going to cover you. Now the insurance company is effectively saying, you are either going to need long-term care coverage sooner than average or for longer than average. Now I have to plan for it. I have to say, okay, if you're coverable, if the insurance company is going to cover you, maybe the thought of not getting it is more appealing to me. Because if they're willing to cover you, it means you probably will live a while before needing it, assuming nothing goes wrong. The insurance company knows they have to collect premiums for a certain amount of years to make long-term care insurance a viable business decision for them. So they are going to deny coverage to those that they feel will need it for longer than average, earlier than average, or at a cost greater than average. So that should tell you something. If you get denied coverage, we have to start putting in place a plan to self-insure. And this means the removal of assets from the discretionary pool where you can spend them and have fun to a more permanent pool, a principal protected pool, maybe that second bucket pool we alluded to in the previous segment, to be able to self-insure some of the costs. But it allows us to go into retirement with more clarity. That's what we're trying to do, Chris, with our plan. I think if the plan does anything, a sound plan, not these free plans. We had somebody in the office recently who came in, and I always ask people, are you working with another advisor? And she shared with me that she was. She didn't really care for this particular advisor. And I'm not going to say the national firm this gentleman worked for, but she did say, you know, they did a retirement plan for me, and I just don't place any faith in it. And I asked her why. And first thing was she said, because it was free and it seemed to be designed to sell me things. And I think she started to realize free isn't necessarily good. And it wasn't a plan, she felt. It was just a way to sell her more investments. There was no plan. There was no bringing in her long-term care needs, her tax planning, her estate planning, her income planning, her Social Security planning, her Medicare planning. None of that, Chris, that we build in was there. But what we're trying to get people, or I'm trying to get people to understand, and Wade is writing about here, is it's pretty much going to be a medical or long-term care shock that's going to come out of the blue. And that's one of the reasons, Chris, I'm sharing with people, when we do an analysis for them, go through underwriting on long-term care. You don't have to accept any insurance. We're just asking the insurance companies, am I insurable? Because that's going to allow us to look at their retirement with more clarity and add some more direction and understanding to the recommendations and suggestions. Capiche?
Capiche.
Capiche?
Very good.
Okay.
Number five.
Number five. This is a very easy one.
Well, good, because we're taking up a lot of time for every question. Now.
I'm going to let you explain it.
Well, it'd be nice if I would have seen this list prior to this moment, but
you'll
go ahead.
You'll get it. Inflation.
Inflation. Mm. That's a risk. It's a risk for everybody. But I think
retiree
in particular with
inflation.
Retiree inflation, because as we've seen, a lot of people rely heavily on things like Social Security or pensions that don't have adequate inflation adjustments. Many private pensions have no inflation adjustment, so obviously there's a risk. It's not adjusting at all. Social Security supposedly has an inflation adjustment, but doesn't necessarily keep up with the inflation that seniors, that retirees experience, because they don't use an inflation measurement that is specific to retirees. It's a more generic inflation adjustment. And as we've talked many times before on this show, retirees are exposed to a different basket of goods that they have to purchase than average people of a younger generation, let's say. Retirees are much more exposed to housing costs, basic living costs, also to medical expenses. Far more of a retiree's budget goes towards medical expenses than a 35-year-old. So, those things oftentimes are going up in price at a higher rate than kind of this average inflation basket that they use for the adjustment. So, if anything, your Social Security will tend to kind of fall behind slowly, and your standard of living will steadily decline as you age because of the lack of appropriate inflation adjustments for your income. So there are some things you can do. There are, when you construct these, what we call our secure income basket or the secure income
stream.
Sources, there are options that have inflation adjustments built in. And there's a variety. We're not going to go into all the details right now of how to do that. I'll just say there's a variety of ways that can be done. But it's something you cannot ignore, because it's going to slowly eat away at the purchasing power of your money over time. That's what inflation
right.
does.
He goes on to write everything you just said. For someone who didn't read his article, you nailed it pretty good, that the retiree inflation is far higher than retirees expect, Pete. But he just gives a benign example, he said. Even at 3% inflation, which we know, retiree inflation is higher on a lot of items, food, energy, healthcare. Grows far higher than 3%. But Wade points out, just 3% inflation cuts your spending in half 25 years into retirement.
Right.
Just 3% inflation.
So the way you have to picture that is 25 years in. If you don't have income adjustments built in, you're going to effectively be living on half of what you are today in a mere 25
exactly.
years.
Exactly. What did I say in segment one? Many brilliant things, I admit. You find humor in that?
Well, it's just,
are you denying, Pete, that I said many brilliant things?
It's just it's nice that you're so transparent and open.
But what I said is failure to plan. You have to put a plan in place that ages. Don't look at your retirement through the eyes of a 60-year-old. Look at it through the eyes of a 70, 80, and 90-year-old, and it is you, the 60-year-old you, and if you're thinking more proactively, the 50-year-old you, that is going to put a plan in place to take care of the 60, 70, 80, and 90-year-old you, and that you had better be planning for inflation, real inflation that a retiree is going to be exposed to, and that's what Wade is saying. Number six. And this one is one that we talk about a lot, and he just simply calls it unknown longevity. Chris and I call it, we don't know when the heck you're going to die. And he has a very ominous paragraph.
Mm.
And he puts in there, how long will a retirement plan need to generate income? Remember this. Half the population will outlive their statistical life expectancy, and many will live much, much longer. Chris and I talk about that all the time. Life expectancy of 82 for a man and 87 for a woman just means half will be gone by then. The other half is still there, Pete.
That Definition of average.
So many people just say, okay, well, I just got to plan to 82 or 87. No. If your whole retirement plan is based on the fact that you're going to be dead at 87, you better hope you're in the first half. I personally hope I'm in the second half. And it's unknown longevity. So many people don't plan for longevity. That's where optimizing Social Security comes in, and why Chris and I constantly get people to understand sometimes the strategies that pay you the most Social Security early in retirement aren't the better ones. But the ones that pay you a little early but a lot more later is a better strategy. And how to optimize their pensions, and how to not necessarily optimize but position income annuities to give you that longevity protection. But I love the way he pointed that out. And you mm-hmm. and I repeatedly on this. Mm-hmm. I think he listens to our show.
Probably does. I don't, it's very few people that don't listen to the show.
These are lifted from our past shows. But we talk about this all the time, Chris. That longevity simply means half of you are passed away. The other half is still alive. And so many people just plan, oh, yeah, I'm going to live to 85. That's what the government statistic says.
Mm-hmm. Or they had parents and grandparents that passed away in their 70s maybe. Well, from then until now, there's been tremendous advances
in medical
science. And people are just flat out not dying of many of the things that they died of before now in the previous generations. Not only that, yes, they might keep you alive, but it's in a state where you can't care for yourself. So not only are you alive to spend your regular expenses as if you're living at home, you're alive and needing way more because you're needing assisted living or that sort of thing. So it's kind of a double whammy. Mm-hmm. You're living longer and at a much higher yearly cost.
Absolutely. And that's why I said earlier, Pete, with my bucket strategy, this bucket one, bucket two, bucket three, and bucket four. I haven't talked about bucket four. Bucket four is your longevity bucket. Bucket four could be your deferred income annuity. It could be your QLAC. Go to our website, retirementandiraShow.com. Put in the search box QLAC, QLAC. Just put in those initials, qualified, lifetime, annuity, contract. These are annuities that were created by the U.S. Treasury last year. Not the annuity themselves, but the rules to allow them. So you could create longevity protection inside an IRA. Bucket four is the longevity bucket. It's the steps that the 60-year-old you is going to put in place that if they hit 82 for a man or 87 for a woman, or let's just call it around age 85, there is going to be an income stream planned for that you. And that's the longevity bucket. Whether you do it as a QLAC, or whether you do it as a deferred income annuity, or whether you do it with inflation adjustments on income annuities now, as Chris has opined on, or if you're going to choose a pension payout that has a lower amount now but a cost of living increase. There's other strategies. Optimize your Social Security to age 70 to get a bigger benefit. Gives you more money in your 80s. Whatever you do, make sure you have a bucket four for longevity. That's what Wade is trying to say. And number seven, Chris, is right. I mean, Pete, is you. Bucket four is declining cognitive abilities. And he writes, a retirement income plan must take into account the unfortunate reality that many will experience declining cognitive abilities, hampering their ability to manage their assets, make financial decisions, and other skills. It would become increasingly difficult to make sound decisions as one enters advanced ages. That's what I just said at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete, how can someone like you help in that situation?
Well, we can put the documentation in place that's going to allow them to spell out, if they choose to, exactly how they want to be cared for, where they want to be cared for, because quite honestly, in that time of their life, they're not going to be in control. And at least my clients love to be in control. And so while they're in control now, let's put in place the documentation, the instructions, the guidance that they want to be there for when they're no longer in control, but effectively can put in the instructions for how they want the money spent, how they want to be cared for, where they want to be cared for, what activities, what access, whatever their desires are.
And who, correct? Who
oh, absolutely, yes. Because the other part is who's going to do all of this? And it's, maybe they have family, maybe they don't. And that's always the issue is who do they trust, who's going to be there, and will follow their instructions.
Well, let me talk about me for a second. Topic that I kind of enjoy.
One of your favorites.
I just love the way he looks at me, he being Chris. If you listeners could see the derogatory looks that he
I'm
gets.
Just waiting to hear this font of...
No, what I want to know, with all jokes aside, I don't have children, and right. I don't have a wife. Now, right. I'm actively looking for one, not the other. I'd prefer the wife, not the kids at this point in my life. But what do I do? Well, how do I put the protections in place? Because most people name kids. Chris has six to choose from, and unless he lends me one or two, who can I name to take care of me? All my friends are my age. My sister is a year older than me, and she lives 2,000 miles away. My nephew may or may not be out here. Let's say he doesn't move out here. And my friends, my good friends who are going to help me now with a power of attorney, are my age. What does someone like me do?
Well, it's a tough choice. Some people opt for the financial part of it. Some of the banks, trust companies will provide that for a fee. There are other agencies and organizations out there who really specialize in caring for both under medical power of attorney, health care, all of those decisions that you would be looking for in addition to financial management, and they provide that for their clientele as well, all for a fee, of course. But there are people out there who do that. The question, you know, the challenge is how do you find them?
Exactly.
And so my recommendation is working with an advisor who has the experience and knowledge in that area dealing with an older clientele who are facing these issues and may not have family available.
Now, these people of which you speak, they are fiduciaries, though, and they do have to act in the best interest of their client, even though their client may be cognitively impaired.
Yep, and so picking your neighbor or friend is not always a good choice. These people are bonded and insured, so if they do something wrong, that you or your family can recover.
Interesting. Okay, well, that is the music that pretty much means it's the end of the Retirement and IRA Show, at least for this segment, not the end period. But that was the pitfalls of retirement planning as provided by Professor Wade, which, Chris, does tie into a lot of what we try to cover on the show.
Those are absolutely the things. The reason why we do the show is to try to address these and other risks that you face in retirement so that you can possibly set yourself up for a better, more reliable, less traumatic, less worrisome type of situation in your retirement. So that is the Retirement and IRA Show. Hope everybody goes out and has a nice Saturday. We'll be with you again next week. Next week, I believe, is a live show. So if you have questions, you can call in at that time. Or email us. If you go to jimhelps.com, you can get contact information for all three of us. Have a good weekend.
Like what you just heard? Missed some of today's show? Listen again on iTunes or the Retirement and IRA Show.com.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.